Hello and welcome to The Bunker. I'm Sian Pattenden. Truth, as we know, is stranger than fiction, but in this case, politics, fiction and truth collide. A Ukrainian comedian makes his name on national television satirising the Ukrainian and Russian states. He goes on to become an actor and wins a lead role in a show called Servant of the People, where a teacher dreams of becoming a reforming president of the Ukraine and does so, rooting out deep corruption. Months later, the actor himself, in real life, Volodymyr Zelensky, is running for president and in 2019 wins by a landslide majority. You couldn't make it up. But who is Zelensky? How does a celebrated actor go from TV set to election victory to dealing with an aggressor such as Putin and his military attack on Ukraine in 2022? Following the first anniversary of the Ukrainian invasion, we're here to find out. Stephen Dirks is a journalist at Dutch newspaper NRC, and from 2014 to 2020, he was NRC correspondent for Russia, Ukraine and Belarus. He is the author of the biography Zelensky, the first major biography of the Ukrainian leader written for a Western audience, and he joins me in the bunker today. Welcome, Stephen.
Hello.
Firstly, why write a biography of Zelensky? What is there that we don't know?
Well, what we set out to do was not only write about the life of this very, very interesting man, but also tell the story of Ukraine, because I think Ukraine is one of the countries in Europe which is least known to the public. People almost had no clue where it is on the map. So our book, I'm saying our book because I wrote it with my partner, Marina Shelkunova. Our book sets out to paint the picture of a man who's now leading the war against Putin. But in the course of this book, you also acquaint yourself with what Ukraine is and what Ukrainian history is. And I think this is terribly important right now.
Absolutely. Zelensky's background, as we know, is comedy. And as we've said, he's a Russian-speaking Ukrainian at first who takes part in TV talent shows in the 90s. What gave him his drive, do you think?
To perform.
To perform and to lead as such, which he does in the end, doesn't he, with his production company?
Yeah, he's always been a leader, actually, although we see him as a performer, as a cabaretier, or maybe even a clown. But in his own circle of comedians, he was always the leader. He was always telling everybody what to do. So he has this kind of natural charisma and he's just the boss everywhere he goes.
His parents wanted him to become a lawyer, is that right?
Yeah, they wanted him to become a lawyer. He himself thought about becoming a diplomat, which is particularly interesting in the conditions he finds himself in now. He actually wanted to study in Moscow at the MGIMO, which is a very famous elite university for diplomats. That's actually the school Lavrov, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Russian Federation, went to. So he wanted to study there as well, but he couldn't because at the time, you had to have an awful lot of money to study there and bribe a few people along the way.
Quelle surprise, as we say. How popular were the shows with the Ukrainian public when he started to become known on TV?
Well, he set out to perform on stage. So he started his career in a very particular kind of comedy competitions, which were very popular in the Soviet Union, later in the post-Soviet societies in Russia, in Ukraine, in Belarus. So he launched his career through this kind of these competitions in which you had to make jokes and had to be funny and beat the other team. Then he became a major comedian on Ukrainian national television. And then he went on to also become a major star in Russia. So let's not forget that this is one of the most popular stars in Russia before Putin annexed Crimea and invaded the Donbass in 2014.
What I'm interested in is if he's popular in Russia and yet he's doing satire, how edgy was he allowed to be within his comedy? Is it what we call edgy with our sort of UK satire history, or is it something slightly different?
Well, if you look at Ukrainian politics, he was absolutely scathing. You know, he did because Ukrainian society, we have to remember, was also before the war, was completely different from Russian society. This is no centralized leadership. There are different political parties, different oligarchs, different spheres of influence. So there's a real political life. There's always been. So he did whatever he wanted. Actually, he later told reporters that he was called to the presidential office by the then President Yanukovych, who asked them to kind of tune down a bit on the criticism. And when Zelensky refused, he offered to bribe him for $100 million, I believe, a huge amount of money anyway. But Zelensky refused. So the very interesting thing is that there was a kind of free speech in Ukraine before the war, and he was using it to the full effect.
Mm-hmm. And even if Russian people were watching.
Yeah, because I think the show was quite Vecherny Kvartal was called. I think it was quite popular in Russia as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he found a production company called the Kvartal 95 Studio, formed mm-hmm. in 2003 with his college friends. Again, what was his role? Was he very much a force of nature in getting this through?
Yes, I think he was, the intellectual dynamo of the whole company, but it was also the financial manager. So he set up the company and he was the one who was making all the money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's easy for us now to paint him as this satirical, someone who's interested in politics, you know, someone who has a mission, but he's also starring in rom-coms, I believe, at
yes.
this point as an actor. And even later on, he is the voice of Paddington in the Ukrainian dubbed version of the film. So he was willing to also, you know, be a jobbing actor as such. Is that true?
Well, actually, I think one of his big dreams was to become a famous Hollywood actor and to gain recognition because of his brilliant acting. And unfortunately, he never did anything beyond this kind of romantic comedies, as you've said, which are actually terrible to watch. the interesting thing about him that he's very much a man of the people. So if you look at his comedy shows, on the one hand, his jokes are political and they're very almost intellectual. But on the other hand, it's not some kind of, well, if you talk about, for instance, Rowan Atkinson, no, it's not Blackadder, it's more like Mr. Bean. So he always had a feeling for what the common man finds funny.
So it's Servant of the People, as we mentioned, that's the real pivot point, at least in retrospect. What's happening here? Are people starting to connect these political convictions he might have, even as a fictional character, with someone who could actually oust the sitting president, which is Poroshenko at the time?
Yeah, the interesting question is whether he set up the series to launch himself as a future president or whether he started the series of a history teacher who by accident becomes the president and then goes on to reform the whole Ukrainian society, whether he was actually playing this president and thought, well, I might actually be able to do this myself. So that's the question which hasn't been answered until now. Unfortunately, we couldn't answer in the book, but yeah, that is one of the most interesting things about his career, that he actually played the man that he wanted to be, to become.
So what is Ukraine like at this time? If we're talking about 2018, 2019, before the election, who's running the show and what influence or other influences might be people like oligarchs having on the government?
Yes, well, the interesting thing is that Zelensky is now known as a war leader, but he wanted to be the president of peace, because in 2018, 2019, Ukraine is not fully at peace because there's still a war going on in the Donbass. It's a low intensity conflict, but there are still people dying almost every day. The country is led by Petro Poroshenko, the man who kind of totally identified himself with this war and as the man who stood up against Putin. But at the time, a lot of people were completely fed up with Poroshenko, who is a representative of the old political class, of course, an oligarch himself. Fed up with the war, they wanted peace and lead a normal life and wanted Ukraine to become a modern European society. And that is exactly what Zelensky promised.
Mm-hmm. What were the promises explicitly? If I was a Ukrainian and I was studying who I should vote for at that time, what would I have been given? What were the reforms that really were going to stand out that Zelensky promised?
Well, the thing was that he was very vague in his political program. So actually, it was more like I am like the teacher and the president in the TV series. And when I asked him about his political plan, there wasn't any really. So then after, when you know, people started to criticize this, he published something. but it was really just a brochure full of nice slogans and without any concrete political points. So I think he didn't actually know himself how he was going to do it. But there were two promises. He said, "I will get rid of corruption mm-hmm. in Ukraine. So I'll finish off the old political elite, the corrupt political elite. And secondly, I will bring peace." But how this was to be brought about, he had no idea.
As we know, his acting roots, I mean, he also has something in, weirdly in common with Ronald Reagan there. You know, he has something in common with Trump in being known, you know, as a TV personality in that way. What do you think the acting background gave to his oratory and how he delivered his addresses? It's very much man of the people, as you say. But that did connect. There was something about it that did connect with normal people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, this is a man. This is a man who's been on the stage for 30 years almost. Mm. And this is a man who knows exactly how to deliver a speech, knows exactly what works, what doesn't, has perfect timing, and has natural charisma. So I think he has everything to play this war leader in front of the screen. He uses it to its full effect because we've seen a lot of his speeches, but normal Ukrainians see him every day because every day he records a video and he puts it out on Instagram. And I think this is a huge comfort to a lot of people in distress right now, that he's always there. He's omnipresent in a way.
He knows how to appear. Yeah. So the landslide victory does happen, as we know, with nearly 75% of the vote in spring 2019. What is happening before Putin starts speaking in public about launching a special military operation, which, as we know, ends up being the invasion? Zelensky has a couple of years. We have COVID as well. How does he deal with being a leader before we get the aggression from Russia again?
Well, he gets himself in a lot of trouble because, like I said before, he didn't really have an idea about how he's going to get rid of corruption. After the presidential election, he then goes on to win the parliamentary elections, and his party, which has the same name, Servant of the People, as the TV series, then wins a majority in the Verkhovna Rada, which is the Ukrainian parliament. And the Ukrainian parliament only has one chamber, so by winning an absolute majority, he could effectively do what he liked, pass any legislation he liked. But that didn't happen because in the course of a few months, about a quarter of his delegates were actually in the pocket of the oligarchs and were not even voting for the laws that he was trying to pass. So that kind of shows you how complicated things are or were in Ukraine. He immediately started to fire his own government.
Yes, that's right. There's a series of dismissals, aren't there? And everything seems to be...
Yes.
It's chaotic in the sense that when he's getting his parliament together and the ministers, it seemed to be very, very quick and rather disorganized from your book. And then, say, you know, a few months later, they're all being laid off.
Yes, exactly. But he's a very impatient man. So he wants something to be done. And when he doesn't see any results, he immediately fires the man or woman in charge. And that has actually detrimental effect on his government. And at a certain point, it's even difficult for him to find people who are willing to kind of serve in his government because they cannot be sure of their career. So this is a man who I think he has very good intentions, honest intentions, has ideals, but he didn't really know how to realize them. And he doesn't have a real understanding of how democratic society works. The thing is that, you know, democracy is based on institutions and not on people, I think. So there has to be some a balance between different powers in society, judicial power, for instance, parliamentary powers, executive powers of the government. So if you understand that, you will not fire the head of the prosecution office twice in the course of 2 years because you are damaging the institution of the prosecution office, which has to be independent. And it cannot be independent because the person who's in charge is in danger of dismissal. You know, it can happen every week. So another example is that in Ukraine doesn't have a strictly presidential system like France or United States. So the government and the prime minister also has an important role. And in the Ukrainian tradition, there's always been, some kind of fight between the president and the prime minister, which is kind of keeps the president in check. Well, if you look now at the government that he has installed, the prime minister that he's installed, Shmyhal, this is just a manager. This is not even a political figure. Mm-hmm. So in this sense, he doesn't really understand that it's not about him being an honest man and getting the job done, but it's about developing democratic institutions in Ukraine, which is a process of many, many years or even generations, and also a presidential term of 5 years.
In your opinion, do you think this is populism in action? As someone comes in with ideals and yet they don't have the political backbone as such to carry those things through?
Yes, there are definitely populistic traits about him, but it's not the kind of populism in the sense that he knows that he's actually kind of betraying the people or making promises he cannot fulfill. I think he genuinely believes that he can do it. So, in a sense, politically, he was very naive.
Mm-hmm. At this point, is he worrying about how he appeals to the wider world as well? Obviously, Ukraine needs a really strong bond with the USA. On that terrible term, the world stage, is he really conscious of outside influence and how he needs to present himself to everybody before Putin starts?
I think before the war, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, in the sense that he definitely realized that it was important to keep to be good friends with the United States. And then we have, of course, this famous phone call of Donald Trump, in which he asks him to start an investigation into the son of Joe Biden in Ukraine. And this telephone conversation was later published. So he was very angry about that because it really made him look like a fool. So he was conscious in this sense, and he was actually rather proud. He also wanted to present Ukraine as a modern sovereign country, which is not going to be in the sphere of influence of either Russia or the West.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very pushing and pulling, isn't it?
Yeah.
The situation, and it seems to be a balancing act that maybe you can never get right between influence and sovereignty, as you say. We've talked on this podcast a few times about strongman archetype in politics. Does Zelensky need to play the good guy as such against the strongman that is Putin? Does he need to be seen like that? Is it really important that he plays all those cards right on the world stage?
Yes, of course he needs to be seen like that. But, it's not very difficult for him to be seen like that because the differences are so big. Because although we've just criticized him for many things that he did wrong, in the end, this is a man who cares about people. And this is an honest man. And this is somebody who's completely different from Putin, who doesn't care about human life at all. So in this sense, he is the good guy. So it's an easy role for him to play.
How do you feel that he has coped, which is such a broad term, but with the last year in being put in that situation and having to be firm and having to put his message across to the Ukrainian people and the world for a whole year as the country is attacked?
Well, I think you have to admire him for what he's done. You know, we all remember the famous video he recorded on the second day of the war when actually Kiev itself was under attack and there were actually Russian special forces roaming about the presidential palace. And he went out to say, I am here, I didn't flee. The president is here with his people. So that was a really Churchillian moment for which you have to admire the man because he's terribly brave. I think a lot of people would have run in these kind of circumstances. And then he's also a man who really has iron discipline and who works all day. He's always done that throughout his career. And that also enables him to talk to almost everyone on the planet. So I've just read an interview with his chief of staff, Andriy Yermak, who said that during the first weeks of the war, he was talking to 10 world leaders a day on Skype.
Wow.
So there were 10 conversations, which also all had to be prepared. So it also took him about an hour to prepare such a call, video call. But he made about 10 of these conversations a day. I think he's still doing 5 of them on a daily basis. So this is a man who is giving his life for Ukraine at the moment, you know, every hour he has.
Absolutely. And we're talking about him as if he exists in a bubble in a way. And I know he has dismissed ministers, but who are his closest advisors at the moment who really do stay with him, if you see what I mean?
In Ukraine, there's a lot of talk about this Andriy Yermak, who is now his chief of staff, who's also being called the Grey Cardinal. And he's kind of managed to kind of evict all competition in Zelensky's circle. And I think the rest of the people, they're all loyal managers who do what he wants. If you look at Minister of Defense, Reznikov, who is now in big trouble because of a huge corruption scandal at the Ministry of Defense. But Zelensky doesn't let him go because loyalty is one of the most important things for him. So once you're his friend and you're loyal to him, he will be loyal to you. The same goes for like his spin doctor, Podolyak, who was always there and always talking for him. So these are the people he surrounds himself. I just mentioned, for instance, Michal, which is the prime minister, mm-hmm. who's also actually not a politician, but a friend and a close ally. So he surrounds himself with people that he can trust, a very close-knit circle, to do the job. And I think it works really well in war circumstances, maybe not so well during peacetime.
Mm-hmm. Will he ever take off the green T-shirt or green sweatshirt? And what does it represent?
Yeah, I think it's about time, don't you think? I started to be a bit bored with them.
But it's a symbol, isn't it? And what's
of course,
a symbol
it's, of? Yeah, and it was in a way it was also smart because he knew that putting on a suit and tie was probably sending the wrong message. But he also realized that just putting on a uniform would look ridiculous. You know, he would look like Muammar Gaddafi, or I don't know, he looked like a Saddam Hussein or a dictator.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
He kind of very, very smart, very smartly thought about how can I look a bit like military without putting on donning a uniform. So I think it worked really well. But
so last couple of questions. How modern a president is Zelensky?
He's very modern in the sense that the way he uses media and the way he's present in the media. I'm not so sure that he's very modern in the sense that he understands what a modern democracy should look like. But I'm sure he wants to find out. So he's also a man, he's not vain. He's not narcissist. It's not about himself. He's like a very dominant leader, but it's not about his own fulfillment. So I think he can learn. But if you look at the way he thinks a country should be run, I think it's still deeply Ukrainian post-Soviet. In a way, in the sense that it focuses on a country needs good leaders. And if you have good people, then they will do the right things and then everything will get better, which is, of course, not the case, as we all know.
Don't bring us down yet. Zelensky, can he defeat Putin?
Yes, I think so. I think in many ways he's already defeated Putin. And if we exaggerate, he defeated Putin on the second day of the war. Because if we kind of go back to what the war plan was of Vladimir Putin, it was not written by the army, but written by the security service, the FSB. And the idea was basically that Ukraine was such an unstable state with such an unstable government that if they would invade with a big military force, they could easily topple the government. Zelensky would run and a huge part of Ukrainian society would actually support the Russian invaders. That was the idea that Putin had. And I think Zelensky proved him wrong on the second day of the war. The Ukrainian people have proven him wrong by, resisting massively, by volunteering for the army, for fighting tenaciously. And, well, I don't know what the casualty rate of the Russian army is at the moment. I think the United States have said 200,000 killed or wounded. So, the question is really how long can Putin continue this war? If the West keeps supporting Ukraine with weapons and training, if the West can keep up military support, I don't think that Russia has a chance of winning, actually.
An almost impossible question, but how do you see the future of Zelensky?
Oh, dear. he promised before he got elected that he would do only one term of 5 years. After the first year, he said, well, I've discovered that I probably need 2 terms. So that would have put him in the presidential seat for 10 years. I think now, he's talked about the fact that he's very tired. You know, if you look at the man and the way he's aged in the course of this year, it's a terrible thing to see. I think that once he thinks he's achieved his goal, and that goal is now peace, I think there's a good chance of him just leaving. Actually, he talks about that, how he wants to sit on the beach and drink a beer. Which is actually very, very interesting because all his friends always complained that when they were on the holiday together, he could never sit still. So everybody wanted to sit on the beach and he always had to do something.
So, well, we'll take it with a pinch of salt, as we say. He might be near a beach, but probably exploring around, but still enjoying a sort of retirement.
But he's a very active man, high energy man. But he's only 45. You know, he's just turned 45, which is you know, if you come to think about it,
it's incredible, isn't it?
It's incredible, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm older. What have I done in my life?
Well, at least we're still here. Stephen Dyricks, I could talk about this forever. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. It's been really, really interesting. And Zelensky, a biography of Ukraine's war leader, is out now. And for those of you listening, there's a new edition of The Bunker every morning, so please do subscribe. And you can back us on Patreon. Just search Bunker Podcast Patreon for extra shows, goodies, merchandise and more from just £3 a month. Thanks for tuning in. See you next time.
The Bunker Daily was written and presented by Sian Pattenden. The producers were Alex Rees and Jet Gerbertson, with assistant production from Kasia Tomashevich. The lead producer was Jacob Jarvis, with audio production by me, Jay Bailey. The group editor is Andrew Harrison, and our marketing manager is Gina Richard, with music by Kenny Dickinson and artwork by James Parrott. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.